Do I still got a fleur-de-lis on my helmet? No, all right, then.
Good morning. Welcome to this Friday edition of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also find us on the Simulcast Stadium Network 32.1, as well as 133 and 1133 in high definition on LUS Fiber. We've got a tremendous show for you lined up today. John J. Hendricks will provide us with the Black and Gold Report coming up at 7:02. The famous, world-renowned college and pro football analyst Mike Dettillier. Mike D. will be in the house for the weekend kickoff. That'll be at 7:30. Eric Narcisse from the Daily Advertiser will help us break down the prep scene like no one else. That'll be later in today's show. And we'll catch up with Jerry Smith, Tulane beat writer for The Advocate. He was in the house last night at Yeoman Stadium as the Green Wave rallied back from three touchdowns down to beat Houston on national television in dramatic fashion as Justin McMillan threw a game-winning touchdown with 3 seconds to go. Plus, we'll have my rant of the week and much, much more. But let's start things off with what our boy Alvin Kamara had to say right there. Do I still have a fleur-de-lis on my helmet? That was in response to, have the Saints' Super Bowl expectations been altered whatsoever in the locker room with the injury, surgery, and recovery for Drew Brees? And Alvin Kamara says, no. Is there a fleur-de-lis still on my helmet? No. I love the confidence coming from the Saints, especially with one of their third-year players there, knowing that he's probably going to have to step it up and perform even at a higher level. Just got to love it. Do I still have a floor? And the way he said it was just so nonchalant. He didn't have to think about it. It wasn't a constructed answer. It was just right off the, do I still have a fleur-de-lis on my helmet? Come on, man. Love that. Alvin Kamara, the two-time Pro Bowler, former Offensive Rookie of the Year. They'll have to get him going for sure. One of the big things this week, though, for Kamara and the Saints is blocking out all that outside noise. They just got to focus in on what they need to do. They're not going to dwell on the fact that Drew Brees is not going to be out there. They're not going to want to listen to anyone's opinion on if the two quarterback system is going to work with Taysom Hill and Teddy Bridgewater, or if they even have a chance now, or how many games they have to win to stay relevant and to remain in playoff contention until Drew comes back. They got to block out all of that outside noise, says Kamara.
Yeah, I think we do a good job of focusing on what's going on in this locker room. I mean, I've seen a lot. People sending me things, you know. I don't really care. It's not really – I mean, I don't care what's going on outside. Nobody's really in this locker room. Nobody's on that field with us every day when we're practicing. Nobody's on the field with us on Sunday when we're playing. It's just us. So for me to really focus on what people are saying or, you know, fans or whoever, you know, people doubting, they can keep their doubts because, you know, I think I got a pretty good memory and I got a pretty photogenic memory too. So them people that be saying all that, talking all that, trust me, I remember. So don't say good job later when it you know what I'm saying, when it's going good.
Boy, the Saints reporting pool, they found Kamara to be very, very funny yesterday. But he makes a good point, right? That's got to be the mentality that the Saints have to have right now. If you want to doubt us, fine, doubt us. But don't come and smile in our face later telling us how we're doing such a great job when you sat there and doubted us and didn't think we were going to be going anywhere. That's the chip on the shoulder this team has to have. You can't just roll over, right? You can't just be downtrodden about what's occurring to you and your team. And you sure as hell can't allow negativity from the outside to affect you. And this applies not only at the professional level, but the collegiate level and the high school level. So what kind of challenges do the Saints have to face, in particular on offense this week, as they travel? They're already there, part of their two-game West Coast swing here early in the season. They take on the Seattle Seahawks. Once again, this is not the Legion of Boom Seahawks. Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, all those cats, they're not even there anymore. The Legion of Boom defense that helped win them a Super Bowl and helped lead them to another one, those guys are not there. This is not the same Seattle defense. But that doesn't mean that they don't present challenges. And Alvin Kamara talked about that yesterday on the type of defense and the nastiness that they're going to face on Sunday.
They've been doing well. I mean, even over the past, like you said, it's different. But, I mean, I think their moral code just stays the same. They play aggressive. They take the ball away, and I mean they don't really give up to a lot of big plays. They keep it in front of them, and they try to they bend don't break. So I think they're disciplined. Like I said, disciplined. They get to the ball and they play well together. Good sound defense.
Very good sound defense, and that's what Seattle brings to the table. They're not as flashy. They don't have the big names like they used to. They don't have a cool nickname. But there's still the Seattle Seahawks, and they're still going to come out there and play pretty good defense. Eric McCoy, the rookie center, will be making his third start of his NFL career on Sunday. Looked very good during training camp, looked well in the opener. Didn't look as good against the Los Angeles Rams, but neither did anyone else across that offensive line, let's be fair. He said that the Saints and that offensive line, they just didn't play their game last week. That was a huge difference in the game. Yes, they lost Drew Brees. That was a huge hit. But they just didn't play their game like they were supposed to.
Yeah, we just have to go out and play our ball game. Against the Rams, I feel like we were a little timid in what we were doing. We didn't play our game. We had penalties. We were sloppy. And just going into this game, we have to get all that corrected. We have to go in with our plan and execute.
You got to love that if you're a Saints fan. That's your young leader on the offensive line. Did you hear him make an excuse there? Nope. Put it on his shoulders. Put it on his group, his position group's shoulders. You heard that? That's what he did. They're not making any excuses. Kamara's not making an excuse. Eric McCoy's not making an excuse. You're not going to hear these guys make excuses because they don't have Drew Brees. McCoy also said that running the football and running it well is going to be key to the Saints winning this Sunday.
Yeah, I would say it's a pretty critical thing in the game. Winning the rushing battle is one of our big keys this week. Just with the new quarterback, and that's one of the things that you have to be able to do is run the football. So,
and that offensive line knows that. They're going to have to alleviate some of the pressure off of Teddy Bridgewater or Taysom Hill. Well, we'll just start calling them Taysom Bridgewater. Let's just do that. Let's just combine the two into one. Taysom Bridgewater. Do we like Taysom Bridgewater or do we like Teddy Hill? I kind of like Teddy Hill, to be honest with you. It sounds... Teddy Hill. There we go. That's what we're going to go with. So Teddy Hill is going to be at quarterback on Sunday. If you're the offensive line, yes, you're going to have to pass protect better than you did a week earlier, but you're going to have to get nasty on the line of scrimmage and help establish the run game, because nothing helps out a quarterback, especially a hybrid quarterback like Teddy Hill, more than running the football and running it well. I see you over there laughing, Lewis. We're going to make this Teddy Hill thing a thing. It's going to happen. It's starting right now. So, yeah, they got to establish the run. If they can run the ball effectively, it doesn't even have to be great. As long as they can effectively run the ball, that's going to help set up the pass, and that's going to help alleviate the pressure off of Teddy Hill. Defensively, they know what they have to face. Defensively, they have to stop one of the most dynamic playmakers in the NFL. Super Bowl champion, been to another Super Bowl. Married to Ciara, Russell Wilson. Okay, guy's top five. He has been forced to lead them because of decisions that the front office has curiously made concerning the Seahawks. But they still got Russ. He's a dynamic guy, gutty, gritty, and he can throw the hell out of the ball. DeMario Davis, leader on the defense, linebacking core. Talked about the challenges that the Saints will face on Sunday there in Seattle against that offense led by Russell Wilson.
It's tough. He makes a lot of plays in the passing game and with his legs. You know, he's proven time and time again to be one of the top quarterbacks in the league. And so probably one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the league. They always know where to go with the football. Does a good job protecting the football and keeping his team on track.
A lot of respect there. You hear it in his voice about what Russell Wilson does. There's a lot of respect throughout the league for a guy like Russell Wilson. So they know they got to contain Russ because he can beat you with his legs, but he's just as dangerous, even more so with his arm. And a big thing for the defense, which played well, let's be fair, against the Rams. I mean, they held them to, what, 2 field goals in the first half? They had a touchdown that should have counted. Oh, zebras. Oh, zebras. Should have counted. Now, they got beat up a little bit in the second half when they got worn down and worn out. And Marshawn Lattimore forgot how to cover. But even though they may have played well, it wasn't enough to get the win. And DeMario Davis said as much as that they have to make corrections from last week's game versus the Rams if they want to win on Sunday.
We did some things well last game, but it was some things that we needed to get corrected for sure in the run game and in the red zone. And that's just something that you have to do week in, week out, you know, make the corrections and get on to the next game and try to be better.
And that's what they have to do. And they have to get better, and they have to try to make these corrections, and they have to do so without the leader of their team, number 9, Drew Brees, who, of course, successfully had thumb surgery to repair the ligament damage. Drew's not coming back. It's going to be 6 weeks. You can wish for him to be there. You can pray to baby Jesus. Does not matter. Breezy is not going to be able to quarterback the Saints. You have Teddy Hill out there quarterbacking for you for the foreseeable future. So you got to step up. And I said it earlier this week on this show that multiple people are going to have to step it up for the Saints. Sean Payton is going to have to call better plays. Teddy Bridgewater and now Taysom Hill are going to have to perform at a higher level. Teddy's got to get rid of the ball quicker. Holds on to the ball way too long. Throw it. Count. Boom, boom, boom. Hit your rhythms. Throw the ball. Get the ball out. Offensive line has to play at a higher level and cannot let every guy across the offensive line get beat up like there were freshmen going up against seniors during two-a-days. Because that's what happened against the Rams. They looked awful. No more drops from the wide receiving and tight end core. Talking about you, Jared Cook. Talking about you. Saints made him a free agent priority. What has he done so far through two games? He's dropped as many balls as he's caught, I do believe. You got to take it over. Jared Cook's like 6'4", 6'5", 255 pounds. Should be no reason why he's not abusing one of those outside linebackers or a DB. Got to get Ted Ginn Jr. involved. We saw how effective he was against the Texans in the opener and that dramatic victory. Get him involved. That, once again, is play calling and Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill. Better known now forever as Teddy Hill. And the defense, in particular, the secondary, can't be gashed by pint-sized slot wide receivers like they were against the Rams. Cooper Kupp is a very good wide receiver, and I know he's a great wide receiver if you have him in fantasy. But you should not be letting Cooper Kupp blow you up for more than 100 yards receiving. Everyone has to be on point. Everyone has to be focused because this is a winnable game. As good as Seattle is, and they have a good coach in Pete Carroll, a veteran coach, Super Bowl winning coach, they have a Super Bowl winning quarterback in Russell Wilson, this is still a winnable game. And after losing Drew Brees to an injury the week afterwards, if you can turn around and go get a win on the road against the Seattle Seahawks and come back home for the Dallas Cowboys and be 2-1, you're in great shape as your franchise quarterback is recovering. But it's going to take a complete effort. It's going to have to be the entire team being focused, playing with the chip on their shoulder, ready to go. Or as Cam Jordan said this week, everyone's going to have to be on point.
That's something you haven't really experienced, being a Saint. So, I mean, we're going to have to trust our organization. I know what we can do defensively, and we're going to put on defense. We're going to have to be able to make all the tackles. We're going to have to play our coverage right. We have to be tight. We're going to have to be on point and play beyond what we know we can play.
Said it right there. Probably the second most respected guy in the locker room behind Drew Brees is Cam Jordan. Got to be focused. Got to be on point. And that's everyone, because this is a winnable game. The season is not over. There's enough talent on this roster that's been accumulated by Mickey Loomis, by Jeff Ireland, by Sean Payton over the last few years to build a Super Bowl team. You lost your quarterback. I understand that. Drew Brees is special. First ballot Hall of Famer. You will get no debate from me on that. But there's nothing saying with the talent that they have on this team that they can't go 3-3 in this six-game stretch, or they couldn't go 4-2 even better and keep themselves in the driver's seat in the NFC South and keep themselves in the driver's seat to making the postseason and hosting a playoff game within a healthy Drew Brees. Everything's still in front of them. They just got to be focused, have a chip on their shoulder, and go out there and execute the way that we know that they can. Yeah, a lot of the responsibility is going to have to fall on the shoulders of Teddy Hill, the Frankenstein monster of quarterbacks that they are now throwing out there for us. But if anyone can do it, Sean Payton can. This is the same guy who developed Tony Romo into a Pro Bowl quarterback with the Dallas Cowboys. This is the same guy who took a quarterback who was coming off shoulder surgery that another team thought couldn't even play the game and helped turn him into one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. The Saints just gave Sean Payton a 5-year contract extension. It's time to earn that money starting this week. We got to take our first timeout of the day. When we come back, we'll talk a little Thursday night football right here on RP3 and Company. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Mercedes-Benz postgame show here on NFL Network Blitz. Jaguars pick it up. And Fournette breaks out. Negative yardage on the night until right now. Inside the 10. And that changes his whole night. Minus 8 yards rushing in the game before that 69-yard carry.
Well, you see the push by the offensive line, but Leonard Fournette, he just keeps his legs turning. You see there, I mean, they just kept moving the pile, but Leonard Fournette breaking a tackle, keeping his legs going, and he wasn't sure if he was ever going to see a hole or any open field tonight.
That was Leonard Fournette, 69-yard run in the Thursday night football game. Jacksonville improves to 1-2 on the season. They defeat the Tennessee Titans 20-7. And a game that was a bit of a snore fest, let's be honest. But that's what sometimes Thursday night football games end up being. Fournette, here's your stat line. He had a long run of 69 yards. His final box score stat line, 15 carries for 66 yards. 15 carries for 66 yards. They bottled him up over and over and over and over and over again, and he had nowhere to run, the former LSU star. He finally broke off that run. It was a good night for another former LSU star as well. DJ Chark led the way for the Jags, 4 catches for 76 yards, also had a touchdown. He stepped up in a big way. And Fournette did help out in the receiving game with 6 catches for 26 yards as well. But as good as the former LSU guys were, I mean, has anyone started to captivate the national audience more than the former Washington State Cougar? Minshew, the second, who got his start last night for the Jags, 20 of 30, 204 yards, two touchdowns, no sacks, quarterback rating of 108.2. Plus he's rocking that stash, next level. If you had Marcus Mariota, you had a decent night. He eclipsed 304 yards. Most of that came in garbage time, but no touchdowns, no interceptions, but was sacked 9 times. So Jags 20-7 win over the Tennessee Titans there on Thursday Night Football, but a pair of former LSU stars stepped up big for the Jags. We got to take a timeout. More RP3 and Company coming up next, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Talked a little pro football to kick things off here. It is the weekend. It is upon us. Talking a little Hoodats, New Orleans Saints, what they have to do on the road at Seattle. We'll give you a brief recap of last night's Thursday night football game, as a pair of former LSU stars stepped up in a big way for the Jacksonville Jaguars, as Leonard Fournette and DJ Chark both came up big in the victory. Well, let's talk a little college. Both LSU and UL have to go on the road this Saturday. LSU has to play at Vandy to open up SEC play for themselves. Vandy's already opened it up against Georgia. But that'll be an 11 a.m. kickoff in Nashville against a winless Vanderbilt team. You can listen to pregame starting at 9 o'clock right here on 103.7 The Game. Then the game kicks off at 11, and then there'll be a special edition of Under the Dome with the world-famous CD following the completion of the LSU postgame show. Now, LSU is ranked high. We know this. They're top four team. And they're taking on a Vanderbilt team that is, let's be just perfectly honest, struggling. So where do we go from here? What do we know about this Vanderbilt team? What do we know about them? Well, we know they're coached by Derek Mason. We've heard earlier in the week how Coach O has immense amounts of respect for Coach Mason. But what does Derek Mason think about what LSU brings to the table? He's a veteran coach. Remember, Derek Mason played in the National Football League. He knows talent when he sees it. And he's trying to turn things around there at Vanderbilt. He's had some success. He's led them to some bowl games. So he knows what elite competition is. He understands that. He knows what that looks like. And he sees it plenty when he looks at the LSU Tigers. Now, he does have a legitimate running back. Vanderbilt does. You've heard Coach O talk about that is a priority for them to stop. Shut down that running game. They don't really have a passing game to speak of. But they are talented. They do have a talented running back. And this is what Derek Mason, the Vanderbilt head coach, had to say about Kayshawn Vaughn, his star running back.
He's finally hit his stride. I mean, he's mature. He understands, you know, where we're at. And we've had to deal with some patchwork up front. And, you know, I mean, he hasn't been swayed by that process. I think, like, for him, he knows, man, this football team's a good football team that we have. Man, we're playing good football teams. He brings a different mentality to the table. I mean, he's tough. He's nasty. He's an alpha dog. And you know, I mean, he's helping young men on our team, you know, like realize that, you know, man, they could be those things too.
So you heard Derek Mason, Vanderbilt head coach there, talk about the leadership that Kayshawn Vaughn brings to the table for the Commodores and how he thrives on facing top-notch competition, which they're going to face on Saturday when LSU comes to town. Coach Mason also talked about what his team has been working on to clean up coming off the bye week. Once again, Vanderbilt is coming off a bye week. It's an early bye week. Remember, LSU's is next week, one of those early weird bye weeks this season. So Vandy's coming off a bye week, maybe shaking off a little rust, but Derek Mason says he and his staff have been trying to clean up things from the bye week, and this is what he had to say.
We took it the right way. I mean, I'm very upfront with the facts. And, you know, when the tape don't lie, your tape is your resume. As we went back through it, you know, they had 23 penalties, you know, in the first two ball games, 13, you know, in game two. That's not who we are. You know, but the bottom line is the margin for error here is small. You know, man, we have to continue to shrink it, you know, man, as best we can. And that goes back to the intelligence piece of how we need to play when you talk about relentless, tough, and intelligent. We haven't been that. So these guys own that. They understand, man, that the ball's got to be better. They understand that, you know, man, the penalties have cost us opportunities to get off the field and points. And that's all about, you know, like beating yourself.
All about beating yourself. Committed a lot of penalties. That's not necessarily something that Derek Mason's going to be too pleased with. He talked about also this new-look offense from LSU. We've talked a lot about it, obviously. Dynamic, wide-open, spread-you-out type of offense. Joe Burrow has placed himself in the conversation now as a legitimate Heisman Trophy candidate. They are putting up monster numbers in yardage, passing yardage in particular, than we haven't seen in probably a generation. We haven't seen this type of passing offense since Rohan Davey was quarterbacking LSU 20 years ago. This is what Coach Mason of Vanderbilt had to say about LSU's new-look offense.
You know what? I mean, it maximizes, you know, their talents and abilities. You know, when you see, you know, what a quarterback who's experienced, who really understands the game and has talent, you know, man, can do with time and you know, terrific skill guys around them. I think it's what, you know, man, you know, Tiger Nation has probably been looking for a long time. I mean, you look at it, and you know, I mean, they're dynamic, and they spread you out. They can still run the football, but it's more nuanced.
They can spread you out, but it is more nuanced. And look, you can go ahead and anticipate that Coach Mason knows that his team is going to have to prepare to try to slow down this passing attack. We heard from Adam Sparks yesterday from the Tennessean, who covers the Vanderbilt Commodores, when he joined the program. He talked about that you know, they're going to have to try to slow down this high-octane passing attack of LSU's. They probably don't have the dogs to be able to do that, though. I would also expect to see LSU try to run the ball more. I don't think it's coach speak. I think Coach O really does want this to be more of a 50-50 offense. I just think, once again, Joe Burrow has the hot hand. You keep feeding him the ball. You keep doing that. If your offense can't be stopped, why do you change it, right? But I think you may see a situation tomorrow on Saturday as they play start in the morning time and in the game in the early afternoon. You may see more of an emphasis on the rushing attack. While LSU will be in Nashville opening up Southeastern Conference play against Vanderbilt, UL, the Raging Cajuns, Billy Napier, and the boys will be traveling even farther north as they'll be in Ohio, Athens, Ohio, to be exact, as UL takes on the Ohio Bobcats in a big non-conference game for both teams. It's a big game for both teams because both teams have aspirations of trying to get to double-digit wins and being a bowl team. And this is a big game for both to help them get to that point. Frank Solich is the longtime head coach of the Ohio Bobcats. He's been there nearly 15 years, which is makes me feel old as hell because I remember him being the head coach at Nebraska. Once again, Ohio is a very good program out of the MAC, a very good mid-major. They've never won their conference championship, though, which is a little interesting tidbit. Despite getting 8, 9, 10 wins a season, winning the division championship, and going to bowl games routinely, they've never won the MAC conference. Now, they've started off the season 1-2, win their opener versus Rhode Island, then lose a game to Pitt, which is nothing to hang your head about because that's a team out of the ACC. Went toe-to-toe with a team from the ACC, came up short, but then lost to old rival Marshall, the Thundering Herd. They won a shootout with the Bobcats last weekend. But Coach Frank Solich says there's a lot of positives from the first three games for his Bobcats.
You know, you look at the positives, and there are a lot of positives from these games, first three games. You look at some of the things that we need to do better, and you address that with them, and you know they're anxious to get those things corrected and move on. So the spirit of this football team will not be broken. I do know that. And so it's going to be a lot of fun to coach this team, and it already has been, but it'll continue to be, and they'll give you everything they got, and they got quite a bit. So we'll just see how it plays out.
See how it plays out. Frank Solich, the veteran coach there of the Bobcats, was also asked this week his thoughts on the Raging Cajuns. What do they bring to the table? What is Billy Napier and his staff? What have they done with this program? And look, Ohio's played UL in the past, not that long ago, since Frank has been the head coach. So he's seen different coaches, and he's seen the program in different states at different levels of success. And this is what Ohio's head coach had to say about the UL Raging Cajuns.
Their quarterback is a big part of that. You know, he's a guy that's an excellent runner as well as thrower. He's got a strong arm. You know, he's not very tall, about 5'10", they say. But there's been some Heisman Trophy winners that probably aren't any taller and are playing pro ball right now. He's got the ability to make the big play both in the air and on the ground. And they've got really good running backs, and they can keep subbing them in. They got an experienced offensive line, and they got a big offensive line. I mean, those guys up front are huge, and you know they'll try to wear you down.
They'll try to wear you down. And the narrative concerning revolving around the Raging Cajuns is that offensively they're one-dimensional, right? We've spent so much time talking about the three-headed monster at running back, Trey Regis, Raymond Calais from Cecilia, and Elijah Mitchell from ERAF. Okay, and that it's all about the offensive line and it's all about the running backs, and that the Raging Cajun offense is somewhat one-dimensional. But you just heard in his comments that Frank Solich himself doesn't believe that they're one-dimensional, and he further elaborated just how he feels that the Raging Cajuns are not a one-dimensional offense.
I don't see them as being one-dimensional, but obviously if we can't stop the run, That'll be a tough deal for us, but I think the same is true for them. You know, if our running game gets going the way it's capable of getting going, and we've shown flashes of that at times this season, I think you'll find that it'll be two teams that have the ability to run, and going to be playing hard to keep the other team from taking control of the game that way. But we'll see.
So, yeah, I mean, you heard him in his comments earlier, too, that, you know, Levi Lewis can make all the throws and everything like that, that this is not a one-dimensional offense. But they are a little bit mirror images of one another because Ohio loves to run the football. The Bobcats like to run the football, and they have a quarterback who can bust off 65, 70-yard runs. So the rushing attack and the rushing defense is going to be huge tomorrow there in Athens, Ohio, in that UL Ohio game, which is a big game for both programs. Could help turn their seasons a certain way. I mean, if you're the Raging Cajuns and you can go on the road and beat a very good MAC team and get to 3-1 before you start conference play, you're in great shape, and you have all types of momentum having to go back onto the road to go to Statesboro, Georgia, to take on Georgia Southern in the Sun Belt Conference opener the following Saturday. So we'll see. LSU at Vandy, UL at Ohio, road games for both mean a little something more for UL probably, because this is a game that could go a long way for to reach their season goals. LSU should mow down Vanderbilt fairly easily, but we'll see. Big games this weekend on the road for both programs. We got to take our final timeout of the hour. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
RP3.
Look, guys, I know Thursday night football is come and gone, and you're probably thinking to yourself, damn, RP3, I can't take part in the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge because I didn't get my pick in for Thursday night game. Hold on, my friend. You don't have to worry about that. Now, you're not going to get any points, but you can still go to 1037thegame.com right now, put in your picks for the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. You won't be able to obviously pick the Thursday night game, but you can pick the rest of the Sunday slate. You can pick to see if the New Orleans Saints can go on the road and beat the Seattle Seahawks. You can pick that Sunday night football game between the Rams and the Browns, and so many other games. Do you want to be bold enough to take the Dolphins over the Patriots? No, you don't. The answer to that is no, by the way. That's some free advice from RP3 to you. But you can test your football knowledge still with Acadiana Sports Station. Just make sure to get your picks in for Week 3 at 1037thegame.com. That way you can try and beat the best with our Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. It's available right now at 1037thegame.com. Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. Woo! We asked you, the listener, and by the way, we appreciate you making us part of your morning, allowing us to help you kick off the weekend on the right foot as you make your commute to work or school. Now, yesterday we asked you, had a poll question was, do you believe the two-quarterback system for the Saints? What type of move is it? They're going to play both Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill. And we asked you, did you think this was a smart move, a dumb move, or a desperate move? Overwhelmingly, you, the listener, members of the Houdat Nation, said 81.3% of you said that it's a smart move. Only 12.5% of you said it was a desperate move, and 6.3% of you said it was a dumb move. Well, we got a new poll question up for you. Kick off your weekend on the right foot. It will be available here shortly at 1037thegame.com. It is, what should the Saints' two-quarterback system be referred to as moving forward? I gave you my recommendation. I like Teddy Hill, just combining the names. But we're going to give you options because I want to hear from you, the listener. We need you your feedback on this. On, once again, what should the Saints' two-quarterback system be referred to as moving forward? Should it be referred to as Teddy Hill, Taysom Bridgewater, or the wild card in the bunch, TNT? Ooh, because, you know, they're both Teddy and Taysom. They're both T's. You got what I did there? Woo! Watch out now. That's that next level I'm bringing to you on a Friday morning. So go vote. Lewis is laughing at me behind the glass. Go to 1037thegame.com. Vote on our latest poll question. Once again, what should the Saints' two-quarterback system be referred to as moving forward? Should it be referred to as Teddy Hill, Taysom Bridgewater, or TNT? You can go vote all day long. We're going to be talking more about those Houdats very soon, because John J. Hendricks from Canal Street Chronicles and Saints contributor for Forbes Sports will be joining us at the start of the next hour. with the Black and Gold Report. And then we'll also next hour be talking with the one and only Mike Dettillier. That's right, Mike D, the Weekend Kickoff. We'll be talking Saints and LSU with Mike D. That's what we got on tap for you coming up, plus my rant of the week. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition if you want to see what we bring to the table on the television side of things. We had a tremendous show so far. Been talking New Orleans Saints football, them gearing up for Sunday's game in Seattle, taking care of that. We also talked a little bit about the Thursday night football game. Pair of LSU Tigers taking care of business. Leonard Fournette, DJ Chark stepping up, helping the Jags to win over the Tennessee Titans. Then we also looked behind enemy lines, so to speak, getting the perspective from the other coaches there for the Ohio Bobcats, who will be hosting the UL Raging Cajuns, as well as Derek Mason, the head man in charge of the Vanderbilt Commodores, who are hosting LSU on Saturday, tomorrow. Once again, LSU you can listen to live right here on 103.7 Game Special. Pre-game show begins at 9 o'clock, earlier than usual. Kickoff at 11, and then a special edition of the world-famous CD with Under the Dome with CD afterwards. But right now, it's time for us to talk more Hoodats with our weekly Black and Gold Report.
Here is the Dickies Black and Gold Report. Dickies, your home for all your tailgating needs.
Saints have to move forward. They have to move on with life without Drew Brees, at least for 6 weeks. And it starts this Sunday. You can't sit there and hope and wish that Drew Brees is going to be coming back. He had successful surgery. That's great. He's going to recover. That's great. He'll probably be out longer than 6 weeks. The Saints have made the decision not to place him on IR. Because if you do that, then he has to be sidelined for 8 weeks. And you can't pull him off of IR early. That's the rules based. The rules from the NFL. So here you go. It's going to be Teddy Bridgewater. It's going to be Taysom Hill. And Sean Payton is going to have to do what he can to create a game plan and a scheme that utilizes both of those quarterbacks' talents. Once again, Taysom Hill, Teddy Bridgewater, TNT, Teddy Hill, however you want to refer to him as, they're not Drew. They're just not. They're never going to be Drew Brees. No matter how much you want them to be, no matter how much you pray that they're going to be, no matter, they're not. There's only one number nine. That's Drew Brees. So, what can you do, though? Well, to help both of your quarterbacks, whoever it might be lining up, you start off with running the ball more effectively. And we haven't seen them be able to do that. We saw them do that in the opener, especially in the second half. right? Saw them do that in the second half in the opener. And Alvin Kamara got some tough yardage there in the second half. Picked up some big first downs. They can run the ball and pick up the tough yardage. They did not do it a week ago on Sunday. They struggled. Now, to be fair, the Rams are one of the best in the league. And when you have Brockers and Donald and those guys across the defensive line, it's going to be tough to run against anyone. But they have to find a way to be able to establish the run. Once again, you don't need Alvin Kamara to go off for 150 yards on the ground. It would be great if he could. That alleviate a lot of the pressure off of the shoulders of Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill. But you don't need them to run for 150 yards. You just need them to be effective running the football. If they can be effective running the football, then that will have to be, that will force Seattle's defense to be honest, and that will free up in coverage the passing game. Because if Seattle believes that there's no way that the Saints can run the ball and run it effectively, and that that's not going to be part of the game plan, they are just going to chew up and spit out Taysom Hill and Teddy Bridgewater. Because they're just going to sit back on those routes. They're going to sit back doing that, and they're not going to worry whatsoever about the passing game. But if they can find a way to establish the run, establish it early, then they'll have a chance. And they'll have a chance to get things moving forward and get things going. But they're going to need a strong running game this Sunday in Seattle. That's what they're going to need. They're going to need a strong running game. Let's head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Doug, good morning to you, brother. How you doing today? Talk to us, my man.
Morning, Ray. Listen, man, you're right. They're going to need some kind of running game, but first things first, they got to clean up those penalties, man. And that offensive line was just a disaster last week with all those penalties. And, you know, just when Teddy would get us the first down or something, it would be called right back because of a penalty, a holding penalty. It was terrible. And the thing about Drew, Ray, I've had that surgery on an index finger, off-field related. And look, my hand was in a brace for 6 weeks. And it was a good 3 to 4 weeks after that before I could kind of start using that finger again. So for people to say he could possibly be back in 6 weeks, I seriously doubt it. I expect Drew to be out week 10, week 11 maybe, if we're lucky.
I agree.
I hope it's sooner than that, but I doubt it.
Appreciate the phone call, Doug. I want to touch on a couple things Doug has to say there.
Okay, thanks.
Not a problem, brother. He's right about the recovery. People thinking that Drew Brees is just going to pop back up in 6 weeks and be thrown for 350 yards and 4 touchdowns, not going to happen. He's going to have to shake off rust, even if he does come back fully healthy. If he's like Wolverine and has the mutant ability of recovery and is able to come back in 6 weeks and he's good to go, he's still going to need time shaking off the rust. He's not going to be the same Drew you saw in the opener. And he may not be that way up until possibly the playoffs. That's the other thing that you have to realize and accept when it comes to this, is that the 6 weeks is a very, very aggressive thought process that he's going to come back. I think he's going to be held out more. I think he's going to be slow to recover. I think once he gets the cast off and he starts healing up from the surgery and then he's going to start gripping a football and he's going to start trying to throw it, it's going to take him a little bit longer than we all hope it will. But regardless, the Saints have to take care of business. And they have an opportunity to win a game this Sunday that is a winnable game at Seattle. and running the football would go a long way to be able to do that. Let's head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Welcome on our boy, Halftime. Halftime, how you doing, man? My man?
Doing good, RP3. I'm doing good. I've been listening to you this morning, and I think you're right with as far as with the Saints with the running game and stuff. I also think, like, people taking too much of a big stock into, oh, they're going to have two quarterbacks. Well, you got a quarterback like Drew Brees, Hall of Fame, possibly, arguably. So you could argue about if he's the greatest ever. And yet, you pull him out to put in Taysom Hill. So it's not new. I mean, he's been doing the two quarterback system. Now he might do it a little more. Well, not a little more, probably a lot more because he's going to have Teddy Bridgewater. But it's not new about him putting Taysom Hill at quarterback during the game. He's done it already the last couple of years. Now, what I think is going to be different is the routes. I might be wrong, but I think the routes for Teddy Bridgewater, the routes that the receiver's going to run, is going to be a little different than Brees, because Brees is a timing quarterback. If you know, he'll throw the ball right before the receiver is there. I think the routes for the receivers are going to be a little different than for Teddy. I think it's going to be a different game plan for Teddy and for Taysom, because Taysom does a lot of the, how you call the system, the RPO system. Because he's one of those type of quarterbacks. And like I said, I think the whole game plan is going to be different. So if a defense that prepared for Drew Brees, they're going to be in trouble because it's going to be a totally different offense that Sean Payton's going to do. Me, personally, I think Sean Payton is taking it as a challenge as much as he loves Drew Brees. We all know Sean Payton is arrogant, and he wants to show. He wants to prove the world. That it's not just Brees that's been winning the games. It's my coaching that has been winning the games. That's just me personally. That's how I feel about Sean Payton. Let me see what you guys say about that. You have a good one, RP3. And one day, you and I are going to have to hook up and hang out one day. Have a good one, man.
You too, Halftime. Have a great weekend, my friend. I want to touch on a couple things. Yes, we'll have to get together and have a cold one. That's priority number one there. That's going to happen. Number two. They already do have Taysom Hill in the offense, and I think Halftime kind of revealed something there too, and it's something that I actually agree with. I don't think it's going to be that much of a two-person quarterback system. I think that's a little bit of a smokescreen from Sean Payton. I think that's a little bit of a gamesmanship with him and Pete Carroll to have him prepare for both quarterbacks. Teddy Bridgewater is going to get the majority of the reps, and they'll use Taysom Hill in there, and they'll use Taysom to throw the ball. Make no mistake about that. But this is not going to be a traditional two-quarterback system that you're going to see ran out there. It's going to be more Bridgewater with Taysom Hill sprinkled in there, more in the passing game. But Taysom Hill's not going to throw the ball more than Teddy Bridgewater. That's just not going to happen. And as for Sean Payton, yeah. I mean, the guy just signed a 5-year contract. Drew Brees is not going to be there the whole time. And Sean Payton has his own ego, and he wants to prove to everyone that he can coach, and he wants to prove to everyone that he can coach without Drew Brees. He's going to have to coach without Drew Brees. Drew Brees isn't going to be able to play forever. Right? He's not. Well, here you go. Here's an opportunity for Drew's probably going to miss at least 6 games. I'm going to say more. And things can start. Look. Let's just chalk up what happened last week as the shock and the team not being able to recover from the stunning development of seeing their franchise quarterback leave the game with an injury. Let's just chalk that up to that. But now they have a week to prepare, and they know he's not coming back, and he's not coming back for probably 2 months. Let's see what the Saints can do, and let's see what Sean Payton can do with the play calling, with his quarterbacks, and with this team having the mentality that they have to step it up in a big way, while number 9 is out. We got to take a timeout. My rant of the week is next. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7. The game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. And you can also find Find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. It's Friday. It's around 7:20. That means it's time for my rant of the week.
Let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears?
Uh-oh. RP3 is ready to sound off.
Serenity now! Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
This is more than a complaint, but less than a tirade. This is Ray's Rant of the Week.
LSU fans, get over it. Nick Saban is going into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame next summer. You have less than a year to get over it. Reaction from earlier this week when the announcement was unveiled that the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame was in fact inducting Nick Saban as part of its 2020 class, along with the likes of New Orleans Saints star wide receiver Joe Horn, UL Raging Cajun legend Peanut Tillman, and others, was some outrage. How dare you put in Nick Saban into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame? He still coaches at Alabama. We hate him. He betrayed us. He cheated on us. Blah, 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 blah. I'm tired. I'm tired of hearing it. Facts. Let's start with the facts. One, he didn't leave you, LSU fan, to go to Alabama. He left you to go to the NFL. His dream was always coaching in the NFL. That was his dream when he was the defensive backs coach for the Houston Oilers in the late 80s, early 90s. It was what his dream was when he coached under Bill Belichick with the Cleveland Browns for 5 seasons as the defensive coordinator. His dream was always to get to the NFL as a head coach. And he did not leave you, LSU, to go to an SEC West team. He left you to go to the NFL. And he flamed out magnificently as an NFL head coach. And he wanted to get back into college. Well, guess what? The LSU job was filled by a guy who won a national championship in Les Miles. So he went to Alabama. Oh, and by the way, LSU defeated Nick Saban 3 of his first 5 years while he was at Alabama. Yes, I understand that you're upset that Nick Saban, who you call the Nick-tator, you call him the devil, he's evil incarnate, I get it. He's defeated LSU 8 times in a row, including the national championship game in New Orleans, 21-0. I get it. I understand. But if you think for any moment of your existence that Nick Saban does not deserve to be in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, then you need to get your head examined. Do you remember what LSU was before Nick Saban arrived? Before Skip Bertman hired Nick Saban? Do you remember? Do you remember Jerry DiNardo leading them to a glorious 3-8 record and 1-7 in the SEC in 1999? Do you remember that even better 4-7 season and 2-6 in the SEC the year before? Or maybe the year before that when they won 9 games and capped it off with a glorious win over Notre Dame in the Independence Bowl in Shreveport? The state of the program was piss poor from not one but 2 back-to-back bad coaching hires. LSU was one of the worst teams in the SEC. They were a laughingstock, and they were on the verge of becoming what Tennessee is now, LSU fan. Remember? You know how bad Tennessee is? That's what you were on the verge of becoming. And Nick Saban comes in, his first year, wins 8 games, wins the Peach Bowl. His second year as the head man at LSU, he wins the Sugar Bowl for the first time since 1968 for LSU. And their first outright SEC championship since 1986. And then 2 years later in 2003, he goes 13-1, beats UGA in the SEC championship, and of course helps lead LSU to a win over Oklahoma in the championship game, the school's first national championship since 1958. In 5 years, he turned LSU from laughingstock to one of the worst teams in the conference to a national powerhouse, top 10 ranked team, a team that won a national championship, and he changed recruiting there and got some of the best recruits not to leave the state of Louisiana and instead to stay in Louisiana, and he helped fill up the cupboard full of talent that would help LSU win another national championship just a few years after he left. So I understand that you're pissed off that he keeps beating you as the head coach at Alabama, but the man deserves to be in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame because what he was able to accomplish at LSU, which when he took over was an absolute dumpster fire. They were on the verge of becoming what Tennessee is now. Be appreciative of what the man did to reinvigorate your program and make it relevant once again, because without him, you would be not where you're at today, plain and simple. That's going to do it for my rant of the week. Coming up, Mike D. Mike Dettillier joins us live right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parse III, and it's time now for us to get our weekend kicked off on the right foot with the weekend kickoff with the famed, legendary college and pro football analyst, the one and only Mike D. Mike Dettillier. Mike, good morning to you, brother. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing just great, thank you.
Well, Mike, let's get right to it, my friend. Let's talk LSU. A little bit of a sluggish start there against Northwestern State. Credit the Demons. They came in with a game plan to attack that zone coverage. Was able to get a couple of touchdowns there, but LSU was just too much, too mighty. They made the second half adjustments. Your thoughts on what you saw from the Tigers against the Demons last Saturday in Death Valley?
What I saw was a hangover game. That's what it looked like to me. A little bit hungover from what had happened the week before. And, you know, excuse me, you got to give Northwestern a lot of credit. I think offensively, they had a good game plan to attack LSU. Short, quick pass, get the ball out quickly, let your receivers make a play underneath, and it worked. And they had LSU confused coverage-wise early on. But then the tsunami hit. You know, you just can't match point for point the way LSU is playing offensively today with Joe Burrow and company. And so you saw it tighten up a bit in the second half when they went to a lot of man coverage sets. And those windows weren't there for Epling to throw the football. So that they were three and out, three and out, three and out. And, again, defensively, you just get wore out when you're on the field for that long, that quick a pace, and you're going up against someone who's red hot right now throwing the football in Joe Burrow. And they got Stephon Sullivan involved. That was something we talked about last week. I know Coach Oye told me we got to get him more involved in the football game. And you got a 6 foot, six and a half receiver. There ain't no 6 foot, six and a half quarterback downfield. So you're going to get a lot of matchup favorable to you in getting Sullivan involved. I was glad to see that. And also Derek Dillon. He got much more involved in the offense than we've seen it in the past.
We're talking with Mike Dettillier, college and pro football analyst. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Mike, let's talk about the running game. I don't think it's an issue personally. When you have a hot hand and you have a high-powered, up-tempo offense that's led by a Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback, the running game is going to be put on the back burner a little bit. That's just how this works. That's how this goes. But some people have been conditioned that LSU should be more 50-50 and they should see running the football all the time. What's your thoughts so far through the first few weeks of the season with the state of the LSU running attack?
Well, they haven't gotten a good push up front, what I see in the running game. The running backs are doing a lot of this on their own. The line has not played extremely well in the run portion of the game. And that's something that normally is sort of the last piece of the puzzle, offensive line play. I've been around this over 30 years, and that is consensus that comes around a little bit later. But they're not getting a good push up front. And the running backs are doing, if it's Clyde, if it's Fournette, if it's Emery, Tyron Davis Price, doing a lot of this in their own. I think you'll see a lot more of the young freshmen, the two freshman backs, play quite a bit against Vandy. Why they didn't play against Texas was because Todd Orlando blitzes every play. So you're going to trust this freshman back who's really not done much of this and at the high school level to pick this up? No, you got to play the upperclassmen that have been through the rigors of this. And so it's something I know offensively they'd like to get better at. And a better push up front from the offensive line. They've done a really good job pass protecting. They just haven't moved people off the line of scrimmage as run blockers.
Mike, Ed Ingram's name has been brought up a lot recently. Everyone fully expects him to be rejoining the team. We keep getting reports that there's positive news. There's just nothing's been finalized yet. When he does get cleared to come back and be a member of the LSU football team, what's the realistic expectations for him? I mean, this is a cat that hasn't played football in more than a year, and he's a lineman. We can't just expect him to be able just to come right in and be like, oh, I got this, right?
No, it's going to take him a little while, the physicality part of the game. But as a freshman, he was the best offensive lineman LSU had. And there ain't no ifs, ands, buts, and maybes. He was the best offensive lineman they had. He was better than Sadiq, better than any of them. And so I think that it'll be a pretty quick changeover for Ed. I think once he's cleared, you'll get a week of work, and you'll see, if not a starting time, you'll see a lot of playing time. They need him at that left guard position. I think that's where they would like to run the football better, on the left side, and having him and Sadiq both there to kind of push the pile, because you're going to get in some games where you're going to have to sort of control things up front, and that's done by running the football. But I don't think it's going to be much of a changeover. Once he's cleared, he'll be in that lineup real fast.
We're talking with Mike Dettelier, college and pro football analyst. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Mike, let's go to this week's game, SEC opener for LSU on the road in Nashville. Against, look, Coach Derek Mason, he's an inspirational coach. He gets his guys fired up, but talent-wise, they just don't match up. So what are you looking to see out of LSU on offense and defense as they open up SEC play tomorrow in Nashville?
Well, the hardest thing is waking up early enough to play. LSU ain't playing a lot of 11 o'clock games. So, it's, hey, guys, time to wake up. You got to go out there and play. And sometimes that leads to a sluggish start. I've seen a lot of teams that's not normal for them to play at 11, and it takes a little while for them to crank it up. But I think they'd certainly like to attack Vanderbilt's secondary, which has given up a ton of yardage against the pass. And I don't know how long Joe Burrow is going to stay in there, but if he stays in there any length of time, he may break the single-game record throwing the football against that secondary. They have not been able to get much of a pass rush, and it's kind of hung their secondary people out to dry. Offensively, they moved the football pretty well. They got a solid running attack. And Jared Pickney at tight end is a really good player. He's a top 100 pick in the 2020 draft. It'd be interesting to see. It's the first time that LSU's going to go up against a really talented tight end, catching the football, and how they match up against him. Because that's where they would like to get the football to Pickney. And he's averaging 14 yards a catch. Well, hell, I know one thing. Unless you got a penalty, that 14 yards a catch getting you a first down. So I think they'd like to improve the running game, but, man, Vandy gives you so many opportunities to throw the ball downfield. I'm taking full advantage of that. I may try to run the football a little bit later in the game, but I got to go up against that secondary with those receivers LSU has, jump on them early, and then, do what I got to do a bit later. You'd like to see a little bit tighter coverage in the secondary. Who has given LSU a lot of problems has been the slot receiver. and they've done some things there, and how they switch up now with Harris out of the lineup, the three safety alignment, which they use about 70% of the time. So will it be Eric Monroe take that position? Will it be Kerry Vincent? We'll just have to wait and see. And Divinity more up front than in the middle. I think you're going to see Mike Divinity playing up front as a pass rusher. I think that's something Coach O stretched this week about, trying to get a better pass rush. I don't know if Caleb Vaughn's going to play this week, but if you look in that lineup, the second-best pass rusher would be Mike Divinity. And so I think you'll see him used a lot out on the edge as an outside linebacker defensive end, more so than, say, inside.
Talking to Mike Dettelier, college and pro football analyst. He joins us here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We're three games in, Mike. Well, what's your impressions of Derek Stingley Jr.? Has he lived up to the hype?
Oh, yeah. You know, he ain't wet the diaper. That's all I can tell you. You got a lot of 18-year-old freshmen, and they think they can play. And then, you know, they get out on the field, and they find out it's a different world. But he's a man out on that football field. I mean, you know, and he's got titanium in the backbone. A lot of guys, because they've never been tested. You know, you're such a good player that teams don't throw the football in your area. Not, I mean, man, we throw the football away from Stingley. You watch the Texas game. A great example. Ellinger went there a couple times, and Stingley almost came up with the interception. And they said, man, forget about that. I'm throwing the football on the other side of the field. They were picking on Christian Fulton and Vincent in the slot. So, man, he's lived up to the hype, and he's a tremendous punt returner. We got to see a little bit of Trey Palmer, who had missed some time early, and his speed. And he's a guy also, I think, that'll be seeing more playing time as a receiver. But you saw his foot speed. But Stingley, man, he's everything that was billed of him. He's been that and more as a player.
We're talking with Mike Dettelier, college and pro football analyst here. It's part of our weekend kickoff on RP3 and Company. We got to take a quick timeout. But Mike D is going to hang out with us and talk a little hoodats when we come back after this timeout. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Kickoff with Mike Dettelier.
Hey, oh, let's go. Hey, oh, let's go. Hey, oh, let's go. Hey, oh.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, and we're talking with the one and only Mike Dettelier as part of our weekend kickoff. We talked LSU before the timeout. Now we're going to focus in on the Saints. Mike, you've had some time to look over this, and look, you do a terrific job with scouting quarterbacks as they go through the draft process. So let's not do the woe is me, no Drew Brees. Let's focus in on what the Saints do have. You have a former Pro Bowl quarterback who is still trying to find his way back from an awful knee injury, and you have a Swiss Army knife player, and they're going to both take snaps under center for the Saints. What do you think Sean Payton's got up his sleeve with these two guys?
Well, it's going to be a two-quarterback system. I mean, neither one are good enough to be a starter in this league. But, you know, if you can combine the best of both, you got to figure out a way to win in the short term. So, you know what Teddy can do best. You know, I think his strength is in the short, intermediate part of the game. He throws the football well there. He was tentative. He was indecisive. He had the football almost like on a yo-yo at times against the Rams. But you would expect that. He hasn't played in a meaningful game in quite some time. You can't count that last game of the season last year against Carolina. That ain't no meaningful game. But he's got to be more decisive with his throws. And with a week of work, I think he'll get better there. With Taysom, what you got is a guy that's a heavy-duty runner. I mean, he's built, partner, and he's got some speed. He's got a real strong arm. He's gotten better as a passer, but he's erratic. And preseason's a mirage. You know, what you see there is not what you see in the regular season. So some people buy into all that hype. But those guys understand when they're getting paid and when they're not. And so you got to use the best of both. And so for Sean, it's a challenge on exactly how you're going to use him. And I think you're going to see a 70-30 split here, where I think Teddy's going to play 70% of the time. I think you're going to see much more of Taysom than you've ever seen. And they're going to let him throw the football. Because in the past, the big thing about, Taysom, they're not going to put – they want Teddy to run the show. Man, they were taking Drew Brees out for Taysom Hill at times. Drew Brees is going to the NFL Hall of Fame. So why wouldn't you do it with Teddy? You've got to figure out a way to do it differently and throw teams off a little bit. And what you got to do, and if I'm a coordinator like Ken Norton Jr. in Seattle, I got to prepare for both of them. One of the things has to happen. You better have better play up front along the offensive line than you did against the Rams, because that game had a lot of fathers for the loss. It just wasn't because of Drew Brees. It wasn't just because of a bad call. You got the stew kicked out of you up front. Man, Aaron Donald played half the game in back-to-back plays. I saw him beat Larry Wolford one play, and then he beat Andrus Pete the next. And then in the third quarter, late, he ran by Will Clapp like they had just shot off a gun for the 100-meter dash. I mean, Clapp wasn't even out of his stance, and Donald was in the backfield. So you understand that you didn't win the battle up front. You got to be able to help Taysom and Teddy by running the football. They didn't do squat against the Rams running the football. And your receiving core, Michael Thomas rarely, drops a pass. He dropped one. And Jared Cook, major disappointment against the Rams. I don't know what happened in that game. He didn't play well at all. He made three plays that he should have made, he didn't make. And the first one would be an interception. Come on, you got to make that catch. This is football. You're going to get hit every now and then. So you got to get some help up front. But I think the biggest part of it, you can't lose the battle in the trenches. You got to win that part of it up front along the offensive line and get your running game going to help your quarterbacks out.
We're talking with Mike Dettelier, college and pro football analyst. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Mike, I'm just going to ask you, brother, what is going on with Marshawn Lattimore? Is it he's just not being put in the right position? Is he regressing? I mean, this is a cat that was the defensive rookie of the year and looked like a franchise cover corner, and he looks lost out there, brother.
Well, part of it is Marcus Williams is giving him absolutely no help over the top on the deep patterns. This is back-to-back games. Williams is trailing Lattimore and the receiver. Come on, you got to do your job. And Marcus Williams has regressed as a safety. Ever since that Minnesota game, he has not played well. Now, a lot of people try to cover up for him. Oh, well, he's coming around. He ain't coming around to nothing. If they got a stud at safety, it's Von Bell. It ain't Marcus Williams. And, I mean, that's easily seen. Lattimore's got turned around in a couple games. There's no question about it. He's always been noted as a bit of a slow starter. And I can't explain why for some players. They almost have to get a couple games in on him before everything starts to click. One thing with Marshawn, you can see sometimes he's not the most focused guy out there. But he's notoriously has been a slow starter. And even talking to Urban Meyer about him when he was coming out for the draft, Urban brought up to me, first couple games of the season, he didn't play well. And he said, by the third or fourth game, man, he's rolling. So it's part of a pattern with Lattimore that he hasn't played well. And they've gotten a good pass rush. Man, you just see the way the Saints can get after quarterbacks. They've done a good job pressuring the quarterbacks the first 2 weeks of the season. Did a much better job in run support. But right now, the most disappointing part of the team is in the secondary, where shaky play at free safety with Marcus Williams. Eli Apple, well, you knew what you were getting when you traded for him. He's a grabby guy, and that continues. P.J. Williams is riding a roller coaster, too, in the slot. And so if I'm, you know, Seattle, I'm going after him. I'm going to try Tyler Lockett, who's a really good slot guy going up against P.J. With Marshawn, he comes around. It's just been part of his MO as a player that he hasn't played well early.
Mike, appreciate the insight as always, brother. Keep up the tremendous work, and we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it, buddy.
That's Mike Dettelier, college and pro football analyst, joins us every Friday for the weekend kickoff. We got to take a quick time out. It's going to do it for this hour. Coming up, Jerry Smith from The Advocate and NOLA.com will join us. Tulane, dramatic last-second victory last night against the Cougars of Houston. We'll talk to them all about it live right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Eight back in coverage for Houston. McMillan launches down the middle for McCleskey, and he puts three!
Welcome back to RP3 and Company. That, ladies and gentlemen, proved to be the game-winning score in last night's 38-31 win for the Tulane Green Wave over the Houston Cougars. The Green Wave improved to 3-1 on the season, with their lone loss being on the road at SEC West opponent Auburn. A heck of a start to the season for the Green Wave. Last night did not start off very well for the home team there at Yeoman Stadium, but they rallied, scored 17 points in the fourth quarter to pull out the come-from-behind victory in dramatic fashion. And we head now out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to talk to the man that was there covering the event for the Advocate and NOLA.com. That's our good friend, the one and only Gary Smith. Gary, how you doing this morning, brother?
Doing great. Still trying to process what I just saw last night. Let me just throw a couple of stats at you. One provided by ESPN that 80 teams in the FBS this year had fallen down by 21 points, and exactly zero had come back to win so far this season. Well, now it's 1 for 81 because Tulane did it. The other stat, when Houston went up 28-7 with less than 3 minutes to go and with less than 3 minutes gone in the second quarter, the Cougars had outgained the Green Waves 308-60. Houston was on pace for a 1,000-yard day offensively. It was actually worse than the score indicated when it was 28-7. Tulane was just getting completely dominated in every phase to that point and was still able to turn it around. Just a remarkable, remarkable achievement. And it shows when Willie Fritz came to Tulane, the hardest thing he had to do was change the losing culture that had been inculcated in the program for decades after decades. And it took him 3 years to do it, and we saw it come to fruition last night, because that was a team that easily could have gotten down on itself the way the game started. But even though Tulane made a boatload of mistakes really from start to finish in the game, Tulane was the team that played with more confidence than Houston in the second half. It looked like the Tulane players thought they should win and expected to win, and the Houston was the team that was trying to hang on and hoping it could win. It was just a remarkable experience, and what a terrific gutty win for the Tulane Green Wave.
We're talking with Gary Smith. He covers the Green Wave for the Advocate and NOLA.com. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Gary, tell me, you know, it started off terrible for Tulane.
Yeah.
What ended up being the turning point where they started to turn things around in the game?
Well, a bunch, obviously, but you start off, they're down 28-7, aren't doing anything right. They get the ball, and they drove 75 yards in 9 plays and didn't even face a third down after having 3 awful drives in a row right before that. I think right at that moment when they scored the touchdown to make it 28-14, they felt like, okay, we're still in this game. We have a chance to come back. Then Houston goes down on their next possession, tries a 31-yard field goal, and their kicker, who'd never missed a field goal that short in his entire career, hit the left upright. And I feel like that's when Tulane really started feeling they had a chance. The strength of Tulane's team is their defensive line and their run defense. They only gave up 20 yards rushing to Auburn in the first half at Auburn, and they were just getting gouged by Houston was spreading them out, and Tulane just wasn't handling their speed and the terrific playmaking ability of quarterback Derek King. But they knew that the defense has a lot of really good players on it, and they knew that that wasn't going to continue. And so once it was only a 14-point deficit at halftime when it could have maybe been a 28-point deficit, I feel like they thought they could turn it around. Houston was playing their fourth game in 18 days. Tulane is an extremely well-conditioned team, and Tulane was the fresher team in the second half, and it showed where the tables were completely turned, and Tulane rushed for over 200 yards, wore Houston out. And the defense, although Houston still made some plays in the second half, Tulane's defense came up when it needed to and held them to 3 points, and that was the difference. I really do think the fact that Tulane was still in the game at halftime after being just basically completely dominated, that gave them the self-belief. Hey, they were the favorite. They were a 5-point favorite going into the game, and they showed why in the second half. This is a team that really does have an incredible wealth of self-belief at this point.
We're talking with Gary Smith of The Advocate and NOLA.com. He covers the Tulane Green Wave. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We're talking about the Green Wave's big come-from-behind 38-31 win last night over the Cougs there of the University of Houston. Let's talk about Justin McMillan. He did not have a great game if you just glance at the stat sheet. Nope. At first glance. 7 of 20. He was inconsistent, did not have a high completions percentage, but he threw 3 touchdowns, and he rushed for another one. And he still got well over 200 total yards of offense. What is it about him that makes him such a good fit in Willie Fritz's offense?
That performance was pretty much Justin McMillan in a nutshell. And that he's a winner. He loves the big stage. He loves the big moment. Still doesn't always play great for stretches of games. Just has struggled with his accuracy on his passes since the time he came to Tulane. But he also can make any throw. can throw a beautiful ball when he needs to. And he's an absolutely terrific runner. And again, that was the part that was totally undersold about him when he came to Tulane. It's like the word on him was that he might not be a good fit for Willie Fritz's offense because people didn't feel like he'd be able to run. Hey, he ran for over 100 yards last night, and he just has terrific instincts on when to run, when to cut up field, and stuff like that. So even if he was struggling passing the ball, and he had one horrible possession in the second half when Tulane was still down 7, he was able to bounce back from it and throw some absolutely beautiful passes. And both of his touchdown passes were great long passes. And then the winning touchdown to Jalen McCleskey, he threw a laser over the middle. Tulane, he was trying to get Tulane into field goal range. McCleskey was covered pretty well in the middle of the field, and he hit him right in the numbers, right where he needed to be. And then somehow McCleskey was able to stay on balance when two Houston players collided and was able to get to the end zone. But that's Justin McMillan. He was 6 for 19 until that winning touchdown pass. But he was carrying himself like he was having a great game. And at the end, you have to say he did. As you pointed out, 3 touchdown passes and a touchdown run, and Tulane scored 38 points.
We're talking with Gary Smith of The Advocate and NOLA.com. He covers the Tulane Green Wave. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Who's kind of become the unsung hero, under the radar impact player for this team this season, Gary?
There's so many, but I'd say right on defense, you've got to look at safety Larry Brooks. He doesn't start, but he plays a lot. He had 2 interceptions against Missouri State last week, and then last night, if you're watching down the stretch, he made 2 humongous plays. Houston threw a long pass down the sideline. The guy caught it on him, but he was able to carry the guy and make him land out of bounds. That was the only way he could prevent it from being a completion. Then the next play, it looks like a guy's wide open on the side. He breaks on the ball, jumps in front of it, and knocks it down at the last second. Again, those are the type plays that Tulane just simply didn't make in the past. When they would go up against a team like Houston that has so much speed, so much talent at the skill positions, Tulane used to look completely overmatched. Tulane was again in the first quarter last night, but they recovered and their playmakers started making plays. People don't talk about Tulane's secondary when they talk about strength of the team because the defense is run by its front four and for the most part. But these guys in the back end have become a lot better. They made mistakes too last night, Houston's a tough team to stop. There's a reason that De'Aaron King broke Tim Tebow's record for consecutive games with a touchdown pass and a rushing touchdown in the same game. Their receivers are incredibly fast. They're a tough team to stop, but Tulane hung in there. So I give him Larry Brooks is a guy. He isn't starting yet. He's going to be a starter at Tulane, and he's going to have a fantastic career for the Green Wings.
We're talking with Gary Smith of The Advocate as well as NOLA.com. He covers the Tulane Green Wave. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, look, right now they're sitting at the top of the American West standings. Mm-hmm. We know that they have big games on the horizon in their own division versus SMU, yep, and obviously Memphis is in a couple of weeks. But they also will take on UCF, which is a top 25 program, mm-hmm, the defending conference champion. So what do they have to do, in your opinion, to keep taking that next step and go from just being a good team, a bowl team a year, mm-hmm, ago, to a team that can actually win this division and win the conference? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's their goal. And I did pick them to win the AAC West before the season, and it sounded like it was a from left field prediction. But the reality is, Tulane tied for the AAC West championship last year, and Memphis, which represented the West in the conference championship game, Tulane beat 40-24 at Yeoman Stadium and was beating 40-10 at one point in the fourth quarter. But you mean the schedule is really difficult. There's one gimme left on the entire schedule, and that's UConn at home in a few weeks. Every other game is a challenge. But last night was the type of game you build on. Tulane expected to win it going in. Obviously got a little fortunate at times. It wasn't looking good when they were losing 28-7. But that ends up, when you win a game like that against a team that's given you so much trouble in the past, that's a confidence builder. And really, Tulane doesn't have to do a whole lot different except cut down the penalties. I mean, you're not going to win a championship if you consistently do what Tulane did last night, which is 7 false starts, and that's in a home game. 7. They were killers. Over and over, they stopped drives. That kind of stuff they have to cut out, but you have to believe they will, because it's not part of a Willie Fritz team's MO. His teams don't usually commit a lot of penalties. They're pretty self-disciplined. It's hard to explain. That's 3 out of 4 games Tulane's played this year where they've committed a boatload of penalties. But those are correctable mistakes. Those aren't mistakes that are based on lack of talent or lack of ability, which quite frequently has been Tulane's problem in the last 25 years, is just not having good enough players. They have good enough players now. It's a matter of just getting a little tighter and not making those mistakes. And it's a confidence builder when you make all those mistakes and you still win the game. And it really is. There's some facets of last night's game when you look at it that it's just kind of remarkable that Tulane was able to pull out the win. But I see it as I see no reason that they won't build on this performance.
We're wrapping things up here with Gary Smith of The Advocate at NOLA.com. He covers the Tulane Green Wave. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Gary, more than 20,000 people packed into Yeoman, mm-hmm, Stadium last night for that game. That's a great crowd for, mm-hmm, the Green Wave. It seems like they've really kind of captivated the fan base, which, let's be honest, after years, mm-hmm, and years of losing and years of having to play games inside their Superdome in a very, mm-hmm, empty Superdome on Saturdays, there seems to be, yeah, an immense amount of buzz and enthusiasm, mm-hmm, for this program. That's how it appears to be from afar. What is it like, yeah, actually there in the city?
It's still a work in process. I mean, again, their crowds have been small because there's a reason their crowds have been small. It was based on years and years of losing. They've only had 6 winning seasons in the last 37 years. But that is changing and has changed under Willie Fritz. Tulane is going to make a bowl game for the 2nd straight year, which has only happened, once or twice in program history. That's going to happen. What's going to be determined for the rest of the year is just what type of bowl game and whether Tulane wins the conference championship or not. But, yeah, this game last night should create a huge buzz because it was one of the most electric endings you're ever going to see in a college football game, and Tulane came out the winner. It'll be interesting. Tulane has 16 days off before their next game against Army. They get a bye next Saturday, and that'll be an interesting game. Army is on the verge of the top 25 in college football polls. If things break the right way, Army might be in the top 25 when Tulane plays them. Tulane has not beaten any ranked team, any team in the top 25, since beating Vanderbilt in 1984, 35 years ago. Tulane matches up pretty well with Army. What a great statement that would be to go on the road in a non-conference game in the 35-year streak of not beating a top 25 team, then come back home and with a 4-1 record. I only see the crowds building from here because Willie Fritz is a heck of a football coach. This is no fluke that Tulane is in the position that it is now.
Gary, appreciate you waking up early for us, brother, on little sleep, I'm sure, with all your responsibilities there as the Tulane beat reporter. But appreciate your time, brother, and keep up the great work there at the NOLA.com and at the Advocate.
Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Gary Smith, Tulane beat reporter for the Advocate and NOLA.com, joining us, talking about that dramatic last-second victory, 38-31 over the Houston Cougars last night. The Green Wave are rolling. They turned a corner last year, got into a bowl game, beat UL handedly in the bowl game last year, and they're just building off that momentum so far this year. 3-1 to start the season and in the driver's seat for the American West Division Championship. We got to take a quick timeout, but more RP3 and Company is going to be coming up right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. Louis Prejean is the producer extraordinaire, the man on the ones and twos, the man behind the glass, the man behind the man. How you doing this morning, brother?
I'm great. Friday, I'm excited.
It is.
A lot of football coming.
We got a lot of football coming. We got more football talk coming up. High school discussion will be coming up at 8:32 with our friend Eric Narcisse from the Daily Advertiser. But it's Friday, so Louis, it's time for you and I to be bold, to be daring, and to make our picks for the weekend when it concerns the UL Raging Cajuns, the LSU Tigers, and the New Orleans Saints. So let's start off with the team close to home and close to your heart, the UL Raging Cajuns. I'm going to let you take the microphone first. Give me a prediction for UL at Ohio.
I love that you give me the toughest one first, Ray, because I'm looking at the Saints and the Seahawks. I'm looking at LSU versus Vanderbilt, and those are the ones I'm pretty clear on. But when it comes to Louisiana versus Ohio, that's the toughest one for me to pick from, because with Louisiana, they're 2-1 coming off of a high. They're riding a different momentum than the Ohio Bobcats are. It feels like they're riding a different momentum. So I'm tempted to pick the Raging Cajuns here, but I'm going to go with Ohio.
Ooh.
You know what? Call on the Arco Equipment Hotline. Let me know that I'm wrong on Monday. I'm going Ohio here. Are we giving scores?
Go ahead. Give me
okay.
a score.
I'm going Ohio. Are you ready?
I'm writing these down.
Okay. 31-24.
Wow. Lewis goes Ohio 31-24 over UL.
They've played twice, and they've both been one-score games. I'm going to look for that to continue here. One-score game. What do you
I
got,
agree,
Ray?
But I'm going the opposite direction. I'm going the other way, okay?
That's what this is about.
I'm going the other way. I'm going to go UL 38.
Mm.
Okay, 38, Ohio 31. I think it's a one-possession game as well, but I think UL... it's going to be hard to stop that rushing attack, and Ohio struggled with stopping the run. And look, the Cajuns are going to have their hands full with that dual threat quarterback, don't get me wrong, and it's tough to win on the road, especially when you have to cross the country like that. But I think UL gets this. It's a win that's needed more for the Raging Cajuns than it is for Ohio. Ohio can still turn things around in the MAC, but I think if you're the Raging Cajuns and you're going to start this gauntlet at Ohio, then conference play at Georgia Southern, a 10-win team from a year ago, then back at home for App State, then on the road at Ark State, you need this win a little bit more. I think the Cajuns pull it out 38-31 on the road.
And I'll stand by my prediction, but I can see that being correct with Louisiana winning this game. I can see it being correct. All right.
Let's go to a far easier game to make a prediction for. LSU opens up SEC play on the road in Nashville at Vanderbilt. The Commodores are winless. They're coming off a bye. We know both coaches have an immense amount of respect for one another. I'll start things off here, Lewis, myself.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go – I don't think this is a close game at all. I think this is going to be a 45-17 type of game. I think the earlier start will allow LSU to be a little sluggish, but once again, they'll turn on the Jets. Joe Burrow will have a monstrous game. 45-17 LSU all over Vandy.
And I hate to say, when it comes to this game – when I predict it by how much, because I always want to give a team a chance any given Saturday, any given Sunday. But I'm going LSU 42-10 in this one.
42-10. I like it. I like it. All right. Our final game to predict here is the Saints. No Drew Brees, yeah. Lewis. No Drew Brees. They're on the road. They're going to go with the two-headed monster at quarterback. We're calling them TNT or Teddy Hill.
Still haven't decided.
Still haven't decided.
The people haven't decided either.
The people have not decided what they would like to refer the quarterback situation for the New Orleans Saints. Seattle's always been a thorn in the Saints' side in the postseason and in the regular season, but Marshawn Lynch is not lining up in the backfield, and the Legion of Boom is not there. Sean Payton has a week to prepare with this two-quarterback system, and Seattle is undefeated, but they've beaten two bad teams, okay? And they struggled to put those two bad teams away. So I'm going to go Saints are going to pull off the win. Oh, that's right, but it's not going to be a high-scoring affair. It is going to be 27-24 Saints over the Seattle Seahawks on the road. They'll get to 2-1 on the season.
Yeah, I think it's amazing we get Thursday night football on Sunday afternoon with the Saints and Seahawks game. I feel like the score is going to be very low here. I am going Seahawks. I feel like they tough this one out. It's going to be a low-scoring game. Give me 20-17 for the Seahawks. Very low-scoring, but that's what I got. Also, people haven't decided. Someone said they should call Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill backups. That's all I got.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Once again, our predictions for this weekend. Lewis has Ohio beating UL 31-24. I have UL beating Ohio 38-31. For the LSU game, we both pick the Tigers. Lewis says LSU 42-10. I say 45-17 victory over Vandy. And we split on the Saints. I say the Saints pull out the upset 27-24 on the road versus the Seahawks. Lewis says Seattle pulls out a tough win over the Saints, 20-17. We'll make sure to tweet those predictions out. That way you can call us up on Monday and tell us how poor we did with our predictions. Reminder, guys, it's Friday night. Well, it's Friday right now, but we got Friday night football covered here in Acadiana for you on all of our Delta media stations. Look, right here on 103.7 The Game, we'll have Football Night in Acadiana pregame show, myself and the good brother Ben Love. We'll give you everything that you need to know to start off your Friday night of football. That'll be from 6 to 6:30. Then at 6:30, Danny Jones and company will take over with the STM Cougar Game of the Week. And STM is hosting Plaquemine. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. Over on Z105.9, Ben Love and Blaine Viator will be on the call as Karen Crow, who's now 1-1 on the season, will be on the road in the Lake Charles area, taking on Sam Houston, an old district rival. On the Rewind 97.7 FM, myself and Chad Jones will be on the call as undefeated Lafayette High welcomes Patterson to the Lions Den. That'll be at 97.7 FM. And then we'll also have the Vermilion Parish Game of the Week on 106.3. That'll be, of course, Abbeville at Vermilion Catholic. Don Allen and Ward Corville will be on the call. And then over on Mustang 107.1, it's the Southside High Sharks Game of the Week. There are also a surprising 2-0. Southside will welcome Franklin. That game will be played at Turlings Catholic. So for all your high school football needs, we got you covered here with Delta Media. We got to take a quick timeout, but you're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. I'm Raymond Parsh III. I'm your host. The producer extraordinaire is behind the glass, is Lewis Prejean. This is RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over there, 24-hour sports coverage. And you can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Reminder, we got a new poll question up. Need your votes. Go to 1037thegame.com, look on our homepage. It's on the right-hand side, the poll question. We ask you, how should we refer to the Saints quarterback situation? Should we call the hybrid of Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill Teddy Hill? I do like the sound of that, by the way. Should we call it Taysom Bridgewater, or should we call it TNT? Or someone else had called in and said, should we just call them backups? You can go vote right now at 1037thegame.com. But right now, we're going to talk a little preps and there's no one better to do that than our next guest. He joins us every Friday. He is the man that covers all the high schools for the Daily Advertiser. It's the one and only Eric Narcisse. Eric, how you doing this morning, brother?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Let's start things off, not about the games, but let's talk about the games that will happen, the state championships. The news broke yesterday that the select schools will not be having their state championship games held inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome during the same weekend as the non-select schools, that they will be at differing sites and more than likely going to be the weekend before the state championships. What can you tell us on what we know, what those sites could possibly be, and what are your thoughts about this decision, this news that came out yesterday?
My first thing is that it wasn't news because if it is news, then it's old news because we knew that they had already, that was part of when they asked to be able to take control of finding their own site. This is what they were angling toward. They never wavered, and they being the select schools, they never wavered on what they wanted and how they felt that they were getting the short end of the stick. So all along, they said, hey, we are not trying to continue to be given Thursday 11 a.m. state finals football games. So we'd rather go find our own championship and have our own site and make things better for our schools and not let our kids feel like they're just kind of, they don't matter, So it wasn't really a shock. I think it was an update because of the fact that the LHSAA said, well, look, hey, we're going to give you some more time to reconsider when select schools really weren't reconsidering. They're like, hey, we'll give you 2 more weeks to think about it. So it really wasn't anything earth-shattering news-wise. We knew this all along. As far moving forward, I'm told there should be a release of some sort today. If not today, then by Monday, that would basically not going to reveal where it's going to be held, but going to reveal the people the viable places, the people that are really interested in hosting the select school championships. So that'll be, really and truly, that'll be more newsworthy than anything that came out yesterday because yesterday was just kind of a regurgitation of what we already knew. Whereas this will, at least this press release will let us know, okay, here are the options, and they're going to make a decision by this date. So as far as what I think of it, if I'm a kid, yeah, I understand we'll get to play in the dome and all this stuff and it has a nice ring to it and all this stuff. But if you're playing for a state championship, do you really care where you're playing? If you're playing for a state championship, who cares where you're playing the game? Just go win the state championship. Go enjoy playing in the state championship. And I guess that's easy for me to say because I haven't been a part of that. But I don't know. I'd much rather be playing in front of a packed house or a large crowd at a college stadium than playing on a Thursday at 10 in the morning in front of 100 people. That's just my mindset, but I'm this generation is definitely different, so I don't really see the big deal. I think it could actually be better for them, the fact that they would get to play on a weekend and possibly be playing in front of a lot more people.
We're talking with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Eric brought up some good points just now. That, once again, this is not new news, okay? This is old news. We knew this was coming. But the sites where they're going to be at, that will be the news that is going to be the interesting portion of this is where they're going to be able to play these games. Are they going to play it, say, in Lake Charles at McNeese? Are they going to play it at, say, right here at UL at Cajun Field? Maybe they'll play them at Independence Stadium where they hold the Eye Bowl in Shreveport. Maybe they'll play them elsewhere. Yeoman Stadium in New Orleans could be a very attractive venue because of its capacity, and it's a little bit of a smaller, more intimate venue, and you will be able to probably put more butts in the seats, so to speak, there. So it will be interesting to see what happens moving forward with the actual sites. Let's head back out and ask Eric once again. We're trying to get Eric back on the line. We lost him briefly there, so we're trying to get Eric back on to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and continue our conversation here about local high school football and about the state championships. So, once again, the decision's been made that the select schools have opted not to take part in the marathon of games there at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Eric, but before we lost you, brother, you made the point, you know, you don't seem to think it matters where to play the state championship game. I would agree with that. My only rebuttal would be this. I think it probably means something to the kids to be able to play on the same field where Drew Brees plays. I think that probably means a little bit more than, say, playing at Cajun Field where they play the Kiwanis Jamboree. That's my own personal opinion. The other thing is this. Okay, I get that, and they say, hey, we'll get more of a bigger crowd because whoever the higher seed is can host the game. Well, that's not a guarantee that the visitor is going to bring fans. That's not a guarantee that a team from New Orleans is going to come and go play in Shreveport or go play in Alexandria or Lafayette and bring fans for a state championship game. So I don't think it's a slam dunk for anyone. It has to be better than what's occurred with these terrible 11 a.m. games. I agree with you there. But I just don't know if it's a slam dunk, so to speak.
Well, I understand that, but a couple of points that you made I'm going to address. One, you talked about kids, you know, there's something to kids playing on the same field as Drew Brees. I think that's overrated. I think that's an overrated thought, and I think that starts by adults more so than kids, because I'm telling you, I don't think kids think like that. So let me ask you this. Do you think, and by no means am I saying that this is an option, but do you think kids would care more about playing in Tiger Stadium or the Superdome?
Oh, Tiger Stadium.
Exactly. Drew Brees doesn't play on that field.
Yeah, I understand that, but playing in Tiger Stadium is not an option. I mean,
not saying it's an option.
Well,
but in
do you think if you had to do a comparison and you say, okay, kids, you can play in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome for a state championship, or you can play in Independence Stadium where they play the Eye Bowl? What do you think?
It depends on what the options are.
That's true.
But I'm going to tell you right now, I don't believe that kids are excited about walking into the Superdome, because guess what? In the past, it was, it's turf, because nobody had turf. So it was like, oh, man, you know, we're in the dome, we're on the turf. Man, that's the excitement. Well, now everybody has turf. So,
well, they used to care, though, Eric. So what you're telling me is that I'm just, you and I are just older, and it used to matter to them, but you're saying now the younger cats, it doesn't matter because everyone plays on turf.
I don't think that matters. I think maybe the thought of going to New Orleans, I think going to New Orleans might be more of an excitement to them than actually playing in the dome. But again, I'm not saying I'm right. I could very well be wrong. I'm just saying that in the end, I think kids playing in front of, and to address the other point, playing in front of fans. If it's held at Cajun Field, there's going to be people there, because the people around here, even though they don't care about those teams, they're not going to not show up to go watch high school football, a state championship game right down the street. So I think whether people travel well or not, I feel like if it's held in the Acadiana area, people are going to watch high school football, especially if it's the weekend before the state championships for the non-select schools. So I do think no matter what, plus I also think people like coming to Lafayette. Now, I agree. I don't know how well New Orleans would travel. And whatnot, you definitely have a point there. But I just think that in the end, if we're talking about one, first of all, we got to remember we're talking about money.
Oh yeah.
And it sounds like this would be more of a financial windfall, and that's the terms that were used at the last select meeting.
Yeah, you're right. Those were the exact words that were used.
You know.
Yes.
Yeah. So a financial windfall, and if that's the case, then that in itself is better than going to the Superdome for the teams. Now, what can that mean for the schools? You know, for kids that are coming up, well, maybe it's a better locker room. Maybe it's, you know, better, you know, new uniforms. Who knows what that is? But in the end, I just think that we're putting way too much emphasis on playing in the dome. If you ask a kid, would you rather play in Cajun Field on a Saturday at noon or play in the dome on a Thursday, other than the opportunity to miss school, I don't know how many kids would choose to play at 10 a.m. on a Thursday, other than the excitement of they don't have to go to, they get to miss school. They get to miss a day of school.
Oh, I agree with you. I think it all boils down to the split happening is stupid to begin with. And I'm not trying to break it down to just to just bluntness, but that's what I'm going to do here is it's just stupid, okay? And the format was fine just the way it was, and everyone loved it, okay? But now we have – and now we're to the point of no return, right, Eric? So the genie's out of the bottle, so to speak. So this is done, and this is what we have to deal with, and it's not going to get fixed anytime soon. So let me ask you, though, about the sites. I think UL is obviously a huge option, especially for teams like Notre Dame and STM and VC and others, right? So that's a great option for them. Yeoman Stadium's probably very attractive because it's an intimate venue and it's smaller, so you could probably pack that in there on the campus of Tulane. What are some others, though, throughout the state that would probably be in the mix here?
Well, the last, if just going off of memory, I know that there was a couple of names thrown out, like Southeastern was interested, Louisiana Tech, you know, and like I said, the thing that was most shocking, and again, it was stated at this meeting that not only were UL interested in hosting, they were willing to do so at no cost. I just don't know how many people, unless they're going no cost, how are you going to beat that? And it's centralized. So those were the options that I remember offhand, but I would be shocked unless that deal is just wasn't really discussed, or it was just being thrown out, or it was taken out of context. I just don't see how these state championships are not going to be held at Cajun Field if those truly were the options.
Well, and Eric, as you know this because you've been covering prep sports just as long as I have, we've come a long way from the days of the Cajun Dome hosting the top 28 and a disagreement forced them to not host it anymore. And then you had other sites that came in and was like, well, look, you can rent our venue for free. And once that occurred, it was a game changer, man. Once Bossier City and Shreveport did that to get the top 28 tournament, even though they didn't host it because they had financial issues, that was a game changer. And that's changed everything ever since then. So yeah, if Cajun Field is going to step up and they're going to be like, we're not going to charge you a rental fee, bruh, it's that's your home right there, without question.
Yes, yeah, and I mean, and there were other things, like I didn't get, you know, when it comes to, like right now we're focusing on football, but, you know, baseball and softball are going to be, you know, it's like, what are you going to do with those state championships? And, you know, there was talk about the complex in Youngsville being interested. The St. Thomas More softball coach, Andrea Wagespack, said that she had a proposal in hand at the last meeting. So I think it's going to be very interesting. I'm intrigued. It's probably the most that I've checked my email probably since I've been back at the paper, just waiting to get this release. I'm really interested to see what are the options and how many options are there. You know, but I think no matter what, I think it's safe to say, and I guess this is, I guess it would be arrogant of me to say this, but I think that no matter what, it's going to be a first-class event. Whether the state championship, no matter where it's held, the select schools understand that they can't fail at this. Because if they do, then they lose, quote-unquote, any leverage that maybe they think they may gain by doing this. Parents, it could be a serious backlash if it isn't a first-class event. So I'm excited to see what are they able to put on, and who knows what happens. Maybe the LHSA follows suit, you know, and it's like, hey, look, let's do what they're doing, you know. So I think it's just – I think everyone just needs to be patient. Let's see what, you know, what the options are when they make their choice, see how it goes. And, again, we're talking about 1 year. This is not a five-year –
correct.
Thing or a two-year thing. It's a one-year thing, and then they get to, you know, reevaluate things next year.
Wrapping things up here with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, and I can't wait to have a state championship game, Eric, draw more people than the Cajuns do on a televised broadcast. But that'll be a discussion for another day. Real quick, where are you going to be at this tonight, this Friday night? Because I have a feeling that you may be covering that LCA Acadiana game, two of the best teams in the area, in the state, facing off. But I could be wrong. So where are you going to be at tonight, brother? What's the game of the week in your opinion?
That's exactly where I'll be, LCA at Acadiana, which is probably means that it's probably not going to be as good a game as I think, because every game I've been to has kind of been a doozy so far. So the only excitement I got was last week that, you know, I was expecting a shootout, and it was only one team that was shooting, and that was SDM. So I'll be at Acadiana, you know, arguably the best press box in terms of food.
Yes, sir.
In the Acadiana area. But, I'll be there. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's a game that's intriguing for a number of reasons. You know, it's week three, and I feel like we still don't know anything about LCA. You know, they won against Westgate. Well, they won both their games, but they won against Westgate, and it was 7-0. You know, offense didn't really look sharp. It was just kind of a doozy of a game. And then they played Northside, which was – it was a rout. So, week three, you don't really know, well, who is LCA? How good are they? And when it comes to Acadiana, you know what they're going to do, you know. So,
yep.
Also, you know, being that Notre Dame kind of runs a variation of this year, you know, when you kind of see, well, how does LCA handle running that veer? And, you know, how are they going to – you know, when you're looking at the Notre Dame game, you know, okay, well, man, they didn't do well against Acadiana. What are they going to fix against Notre Dame? So I'm intrigued to see how this happens. And, you know, more importantly, just all the talk on both sides. You know, I'm just glad that the game is here and you know, really and truly that we don't have to hear about it anymore, because I was in Virginia hearing about this stuff. So so I'm just glad the game is here and you know, it all the talk will subside. At least temporarily.
Eric, appreciate the time. Keep up the tremendous work over there at the Daily Advertiser, brother, and we'll talk to you next Friday.
All right, appreciate it, my man. Take care.
That's Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser, breaking down all things preps for us right there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We got to take our final timeout of today's show and of the week. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Don't forget to go to 1037thegame.com, vote on our latest poll question. What should the Saints' two-quarterback system be referred to as moving forward? Should it be Teddy Hill, Taysom Bridgewater, or TNT? Right now, TNT is leading the vote. 66.7% say TNT. I want to thank all of our guests, Mike Dettelier, Gary Smith, and Eric Narcisse. Tremendous weekend. Lewis, tremendous job as always, brother. You're just getting better and better every day. Y'all be safe to one another. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the football. And we'll talk to you on Monday from 6 to 9 right here, RP3 and Company.